Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is Eduardo Barr, who is an actor, and I'm going to go to you pretty quickly because I'm wondering if you, if people are going to know you by some of your work.
I don't think so.
No? Okay, well, okay, you were raised
in Argentina. It would be nice.
Yes. You were raised in Argentina, and I understand that you always knew you wanted to be an actor?
Correct.
How old were you when you first realized this?
I don't know, like 6, 7.
Yes. And you would practice yourself?
I would watch movies, and then I would go to the back, very back of the house and reenact the scenes.
And did your parents know you were doing this and just humor
they knew
you?
Yeah, they used to humor me. I was the artistic one. But
how many of you in the family?
Just two, my brother and I. He's 1 year older than
me. Does he still live there?
No, actually, he moved to Spain. Now he's in Pamplona.
And your parents are still here?
My mom passed away, and my dad's in Argentina. Actually, I was there 2 weeks ago. I went to visit him for his birthday.
You go regularly? Or?
I try to go every other year. You know, 1 year I go to Spain, see my brother. 1 year I go to Argentina, see my dad.
That's nice. How did you... You did acting in Argentina, right?
Yes, I did.
So how did life go that you were a six-year-old practicing on the sly to actually working as an actor?
Well, that was a good one. Well, you know, I did that as a hobby kind of thing, and I went to high school. And when I finished high school, then I decided to go take, you know, acting classes and singing classes and dancing. And I was interested in musicals.
And there was opportunity for you, Argentina.
And then there was, there was an opportunity to do theater. Like
Buenos Aires?
In Buenos Aires, correct.
So like,
you know, in Broadway, there's an off-Broadway. Yes. Well, in Argentina, the main street is Corrientes, which is the main street for theaters. And there's an off-Corrientes, you know, venues, you know, smaller
theaters.
But that's
a very sophisticated city. So
yes, it is. So I had a chance to do, you know, a few little plays.
How did you get parts? How do you do that? You just sign up for an audition?
Yeah, I used to hear from friends, you know, from the classes. Do you know they're casting for this or for that?
No,
I didn't. And then, you know, that's how, you know, I used to go. There were no agents or anything back then for me. So it was like,
What was your first role?
My first role was Blinda's son, and it was some drama with I remember Ilda Mantovani, that was her name, the one playing my mother.
Is that something we would know in America, or was that specific?
Not really. It was a play made over there.
And what about musicals?
I ended up starting in a big musical called Dracula, which is sort of, you know, the structure would be like the Phantom of the Opera, but the story is Dracula. And it's all made in Argentina, you know, with Argentinian musicians, and the music and everything is original. And it was, you know, it was a huge success. It was the very first time they did something like that. Actually, originally, the producer wanted to bring the Phantom of the Opera to Buenos Aires, and he was terrified that it was not going to work because people were not used to that kind of musical.
Now, when you say that kind of musical, you mean something
like
serious?
You're singing, and you're singing the whole thing. I mean, there's very little dialogue.
And that was foreign to Argentina?
Yes. We used to have the old-fashioned, you know, like, you know, there's dial, and then
a song. Yes.
And then like, dial, and then, and, you know, that kind of like 42nd
Oklahoma
Street, Oklahoma, 42nd Street, you know, that kind of thing, Annie.
But what about opera?
Well, that's the thing. It would have been almost as opera, so that was, they were terrified.
It sounds like what you were saying, but there was opera, I'm sure.
Well, there's a huge opera house called El Teatro Colón, which is very famous.
Oh, but you're saying like that crossover to try to slip one in?
The producer wasn't too... And I'll tell you mainly why. You know, the rights to get the play were $4 million, plus all the money you have to put on top to make it happen.
Yes.
So it was too much of a risk So this guy, very cleverly, Pepe Cibrián, decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to make one for you in that format, and it's going to be a lot cheaper. It ended up being $1 million, which for Argentina back then was like the $1 million production. And
that still sounds like a lot of money to me. But yes.
And it was a fantastic, you know, success.
How long did you stay in Argentina? And what made you leave, and where'd you
go? Well, I was, you know, I stayed there until I was 26. I was like 3-4 years doing this musical. we were touring around the country. We were working in Buenos Aires. And then the last tour we did, when I was done, I thought, well, this is it. I need to go to America. As I knew I wanted to be an actor, I knew I wanted to come to America. Don't ask me why. My heart was always calling me to come to America.
New York?
No, not really. Not necessarily. It was America, period.
So where did you go the first place?
The first place was actually Los Angeles.
Uh-huh. Did you know people here or you just were brave enough?
I knew one person that I did one movie as an extra when I was 19.
Oh.
It was called Gung Ho. Mm-hmm. With Ron Howard was directing, Michael Keaton was the star, and the co-star was Getty Watanabe, this Japanese descent guy.
Uh-huh.
And we became friends, we stayed friends. So when I decided to come over, he said, I was going to go to New York because it was some people I knew, mm-hmm. friends of my family, and it was the safe way to go. And then I called Getty. I said, you know what, I'm going to the States. Oh, my God, you have to come to L.A. And I said, okay, then you know what, I'm going to L.A. I think I like
Good
that better.
You.
So I changed my mind and I came to L.A.
And what was it like when you first got here?
Disappointing. Well, you know, like any dream that you have, when you finally get it, you think, this is it?
That
was my thing, you know, this is it? And you realize, like, you know, it's people are people everywhere. And you know, and yes, there's a lot of wonderful things.
Well, L.A. is also a little deceptive. I mean, I'm from L.A., so
uh-huh.
And I remember knowing that people would complain about various things. And you kind of have to be, you have to live here to know where the secret treasures are.
That is true.
I mean, how do you get in that as somebody true. Who's just come here?
Yeah. Well, you know, my friend was kind enough to take me to all the, you know, touristy things to do and go and blah, blah, blah. But like, for example, one thing, it was so funny. She took me to Venice Beach and we were on, back in the day, mm-hmm. They were shooting Baywatch still. And you know, it was like a regular weekday and a lot of bums and ugly people. And I said, where's the beautiful people here? And my friend's like, well, those are extras. It's just for the TV show.
The beautiful people
wow.
of Baywatch.
Well, yeah, you know.
They bring them
because,
out
Because, you
later.
Know, you see down the streets, everybody's gorgeous,
yes.
you know. Any kind of movie or TV or whatever that you watch, you know, everybody looks nice.
Right. That's why
they
got
hired. But then you have to realize that, well, all those were paid extras.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of like, oh, okay, there's regular people too.
So now what year was that?
That was 1993.
Okay, so
LA, yeah.
Talk on after that. How did life go?
I was hoping my friend would help me, and he didn't.
Deliberately
so
didn't, or just lazy?
No. He helped me, you know, like showed me around and got him his place, whatever. But he was also an actor, and I was hoping not to do anything for me, but at least to teach me the ropes.
Uh-huh.
What you need to do, where you need to go, and he didn't. But, you know, I started talking to people and meeting new people, and
mm-hmm.
I started taking classes, and that's how I made
good.
My
so
own
kind
way.
Kind of knew what... Oh, well, you also, you said you had started to take classes in Argentina after high school.
Yes.
So you
yes,
knew something. Yes. You had a
well,
clue. Well,
I knew that here was going to be different. First of all, I'm using a language that isn't my own. And second, you know, it's different.
Sure.
It is different. Believe me, it's different. So... You know, I wanted to get acquainted with how it's done here, how it works here. I got familiar with, you know, you have to be union to get an agent. To become union, you have to, you know, work as an extra, which I was working as an extra for many years. And I got my vouchers and I became union and I got
an agent.
It's such
a slow agent. Process, isn't it?
It's, yeah. Well, it was funny because I was doing this movie Pleasantville.
Oh!
And
what were you doing in that?
I was one of the guys from the village.
Then I'm going to go watch it again. By the way, I just want to tell you, I could lip sync that movie.
Oh, really?
Yes,
wow. It's
I've
a great
it so
movie. It's a lovely movie. It was a great
so
experience.
Smart.
Watching it was a great experience, you know, being in it, watching it.
All right, so now I know what I'm doing tomorrow night.
It's really
watching
fantastic.
It for the 730th time with an iTunes. Okay, go ahead.
So I was doing that and I was working also. Back then, I was fully sighted. And So you know, the deal was 1 month. It was the courtroom thing, and that was it. And then, you know, the director picked some people to keep on going because he likes us. And, well, we kept on going. But then there were times like, well, I can't. I have to go to work. Oh, please come. We'll give you a sack voucher if you come over. Okay. So that's how I started getting, you know, a couple of those. And then that was it. And then, you know, short after that, I got sick and I went blind and that was
okay,
it.
Can you do that more slowly?
Uh-huh.
Because, yes. I just happened that I read an article.
Yes.
And I didn't know any of this about you, that when you had gone for hair restoration.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Well,
you're such a good-looking man. Why would you want to even bald?
Well, because I want to go bald. my brother, you know, started getting bald when he was 24.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't a family. My dad had very thin, you know.
Okay.
So I
you it's know, funny, from out here, it doesn't change a look to negative.
Well, go because ahead. Now it's done. I got
oh, I see.
It.
No, but even if you hadn't. Okay, so go ahead. So what happened?
So anyway, so as vain as I am, I decided I wanted to get hair restoration. And it was right after I finished this Pleasantville thing. It was around July, something like that, in 1997. And so they did some lab tests, you know, just to make sure.
Now, why do they do that?
Fine.
Just do they need to
well, because
blood
it's kind of surgery.
And,
I mean, yeah. they cut you. I mean,
yes.
They cut a chunk of beef from back
okay,
here. You
I
know?
See.
So that's when they knew I was HIV positive.
And they, how did they tell you that?
And they, like, you know, they put me in a room and they told me, and, you know, in a way, in my heart, I knew I already had it.
Why?
I don't know.
Were you not feeling healthy? Or you?
No,
just,
no. It wasn't about that. It was about, like, probably have it, but it's not going to affect me. That was my mentality back then. So when they told me, he said, well, if you want to cancel, you know, it's okay. And I said, no, I came for hair and I'm living with hair. Okay. Well, so they did
so they
the
could
procedure.
Do that anyway. They just had to
oh, yes.
make what kind of adjustments
in,
given
that. You know, they just knew what was happening. They were extra careful, you know, with
for your
and
health,
stuff like that.
To, yeah.
So I got that done, and that was July, and I didn't do anything about it.
Now, what does that mean, you didn't do anything about
meaning
it?
Meaning going to a doctor or going to any place to,
and
like,
you were
check.
Not in a relationship at that point?
No, I wasn't in a relationship. I was extremely healthy. I was looking fantastic. I was posing for magazines. I was doing art books. I was, you know.
I can see that, yeah.
It was all fantastic, right? And then one day, I feel like I have the flu.
Oh.
And then it was, like, really hard. And I go to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, you know, I'll give you antibiotics. Oh, okay. And that wasn't working. And then I couldn't hold anything in my stomach. Mm-hmm. I was puking. And I got dehydrated. I couldn't drink a drop of water because I could not hold it in. And the pain in the head was immense.
Oh.
It was like my head was exploding. So I got admitted in the hospital a week later.
Yes.
And they said, we're going to do the best we can.
Meaning what?
Meaning like I was dying. And like, what? I was dying. I had meningitis.
Oh, so you were dying from that?
From, yeah. Because the HIV, what it does, it lowers your immune system. So then you're very weak and you can get anything. In my case, I got meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the worst one, which is cryptomeningitis.
What is that?
Is this the kind of bacteria that affects.
Okay.
So I got my brain, my lungs, my spine, everything was taken. And as the guy said, we're going to do the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I was dying, even though, you know, my brother came to help me and take care of me. And I heard, you know, the doctor telling my brother, well, if he doesn't respond by the weekend, he's gone. And I'm thinking, I'm not going anywhere. You know,
gosh, they shouldn't say that in front
of
a patient.
Well, yeah, you know, and they thought because I was, you know, totally drugged up with, you know, morphine and Demerol and everything.
It still should have, yeah.
Even though I was in La La Land, I would hear that and I'm thinking, I'm not going anywhere.
Good for you.
And I wasn't. I stayed 3 months in the hospital. They had to do neurosurgery. To open a hole and put a hose to drain
for the brain,
extra
for
fluid.
Your brain?
Well, the doctor explained to me
cranial, not in your lungs.
Yes, no, in my crane. The problem was that even though my body was responding to the medicines and everything was fine, the body was in shock and was producing more liquid in my brain than it could absorb. So that liquid was producing more pressure still. So the only way to drain it was...
Oh, that must have been horrible, 3 months
in. And I got, you know, a hose that goes to my stomach. and after that, you know, everything went
But you didn't seem to lose your spirit during this, huh?
No. And on top of that, I went blind, totally blind when I was in the hospital.
While you were there, you could see that happening?
Well, the first week, I used to wear just glasses, prescription glasses. Mm-hmm. And because I was in the hospital, I just put them in the night table. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was seeing blurry. But then the blurry, even though I put the glasses on, it was still blurry. And I told my brother, you know, I can't see well. And I told the doctors, well, you know, the medicine is really strong and all the pressure on your brain, you know, it's okay, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I lost it. Mm-hmm. Really, in a few days, I was totally blind. It was totally dark. My eyes were like
I mean, you're smiling now.
I didn't panic.
Well, that's what I want. Okay.
I didn't panic.
Because?
Because I knew it was going to pass.
Uh-huh.
My soul knew it was just a lesson to go through, an experience to experience, and it was going to pass.
And it didn't.
At the beginning, it didn't, but then slowly and surely. Mm-hmm. Today, I can see you, foggy, but I can see you.
Okay.
That's why, you know, with that, the title of that, you know, interview is like blind. I am legally blind.
Yes,
I'm not totally blind.
Okay. Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
So
that makes it easier for you to function in general.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, the thing is that at the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. I was totally blind and I was told you're going to be blind forever.
Mm-hmm.
You're 30. Nothing regrows after 30. Nerves don't regrow. You're going to be blind. And I left the office of that doctor and I told my brother, he's wrong. I'm going to see again. Because in the hospital, it was totally black. And now
yes.
I can see your shadow if you're really close
uh-huh.
to me. And sure enough, little by little, the shadow got better. I started seeing colors. And now...
Oh, so you can see colors this, also some?
Right now, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It's been 18 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
It's been
time.
A long time.
Yes.
It was a very slow process. It was very painful, meaning, you know,
yes,
emotionally.
Of course.
But right now, I can say I see pretty much everything, but it's very foggy. And I find that the fog is thinning out still. Obviously,
nice
my nerves
to hear
are
that.
Growing.
Yes. So between the hospital stay 18
yes.
years ago
yes.
and now, you still had to learn to live with a different set of abilities.
Yes.
How did you go about that?
I don't know.
I mean, you what?
I'm courageous.
You are courageous, yes. But there must have been people who taught you to do things.
Not really.
Really?
At the very beginning, I was all by myself, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
All the friends that you have disappear. I had no partner or nothing.
Do you have new
and
friends?
I had a very good friend that is the only one that stayed with me and, you know, helped me in every way. And I used to, you know, get a service of a lady coming every day to take care of me, a caregiver.
Okay.
And she became my family, actually.
Yeah, because even you know, fixing food for yourself. And
back in the day, I could not see the water. I could
no,
not see the fire.
Course.
I could not see any of that.
So all you really need, you needed those two people for a start.
Yes, yes. And then in time, you know, I started venturing myself with things. And
you
it never
what?
Stopped me. You know, I don't think I've ever been stopped by anything.
That's
really.
Wonderful. Oh, gosh, that's
like even, you know,
smile.
when I first left the hospital, I was really weak. I'm not fat now. I was 40 pounds lighter. And I was very, very weak from 3 months in the hospital.
Yeah.
But I said
but
to my brother...
you still had your apartment to go back
yes,
to.
Yes, yes. And I told my brother, well, you need to go someplace. Let's go to Universal Studios. And I said, well, but you can't walk too much. It doesn't matter. Let's go in a wheelchair. And we rented a wheelchair, and I went. And I used to vomit a lot because of the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It was really strong. So I used to carry what I called my helmet, which was actually a plastic
bag
bowl.
For vomiting.
Yeah, and I would have it with me just in case. And, you know, it sounds disgusting, I know. But,
but
it would not. What I mean is, like, I was never stopped.
Yes, it sounds...
Okay, if I need something, well, I bring it with me. I bring a bowl.
It doesn't sound disgusting. It sounds like an example that is wonderful to hold up to people.
Yeah, you know, it was very easy to say, oh, poor me, and stay home.
Apparently wasn't
but,
easy. You didn't do
but
it.
But I know that wasn't me at all.
Right.
I'm extremely perseverant.
Oh,
and if
so
I want
nice.
Something, I'm going to get it somehow.
That's wonderful. What about work? I mean, how is now? What's your acting like?
Well,
now?
Then, you know, after that, you know, when I started seeing it a little bit better and I was able to, you know, manage myself to go around, you know, walking around and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I wanted to do translations. And I went to this center for, you know, whatever to.
Spanish to English? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the lady said, well, you know, there are really too many. but what do you do? And I said, well, I'm an actor. I don't think that's going
to... But oh, when you say you wanted to do translations, for whom? I mean, what did that mean?
For whatever, you know, like just to offer myself, my services.
Oh, as a translator.
As a translator,
I see, okay.
Yes. To work in something, you
yes.
know, to make some kind of a living. And
so you told her you're an actor.
And the lady said, no, well, you're an actor? Well, we do know a place. And that's how I heard of Media Access back in the day, which is how I met David Zimmerman.
Oh.
And Media Access was 3 blocks from where I was living at that time. So I would walk to that center and I started taking classes. And now I was taking classes from the disabled side,
mm-hmm.
With disabled people.
Now, what does that
chairs.
Mean, taking classes with the disabled side? Are those
well,
different
because
kind of classes?
It's, no, it's not. It's different because the experience is different. I mean, mm-hmm. like it's the energy is different. You know, when you're fully able-bodied mm-hmm. and you go to a class or whatever, your mentality is somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
When you are disabled, you're trying to make it through the scene with whatever your disability is.
Uh-huh.
And in a way, we're all in the same boat. So it made
I see
it really,
what you're saying, yes.
And in a way, also, it opened my eyes to other disabilities because I was totally unaware of...
Mm-hmm.
You know, cerebral palsy and deaf people and car accidents, you know, being in a
mm-hmm.
wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
completely paralyzed, and all the hassles that they need to go through, you know, just to go through a day.
Yes. So, but is your goal, I would guess, to be cast in roles as they come?
Yes. The funny thing is that, you know, at that point, the lady said, well, I can send you for blind things, but you don't look blind.
I'm sorry, I laughed. Somebody forgive me.
And I said, well, what, don't you have a white cane? No, I don't.
Don't you have a what?
A white cane.
Oh, for you to use so you can
yeah.
look blind?
Yeah, so I said, well, let me go to the Braille Institute and get a white cane. So I go there, well, you have to be legally blind. It's like, oh, where do I know that? Well, you need to go, and they give me this address, right? And so I go to this place, and of course, legally blind means that a normal person is 20/20. Legally blind, you're 20 over 200.
Mm-hmm.
I was 20 over 1400.
Mm-hmm.
I was very legally blind. So they gave me the cane right away. They taught me how to use it. And so I bought some dark glasses, and I went with the kids. Well, now I look blind enough. But again, you know what? All the parts I did was as a sighted person. Pretending to see. I never casted
so
as
I was
going to
ask you that. Because you
I don't play blind very well.
Whatever looking blind is,
uh-huh.
you're an exceedingly handsome, energetic man.
Uh-huh, thank you.
So why would you have to be in a particular role just because that's
yes.
your physical reality?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because before I came here, you know, I read the email that David sent me, you know, with the date for your interview. And I went again through that interview that you read. And, you know, the title is strong. It's like gay, blind,
HIV. What I read about you.
And it sounds like this box, you know, with all these labels.
Right.
And I think we're so much more than labels. You know?
Yes.
Those are just, you know, one more thing.
Right.
So, anyway, I don't know.
And yes, the whole issue—the whole issue of
disability—that yeah.
label,
yeah,
seems a little. I mean, yes, I know that it means there's some specific physical limitation,
mm-hmm.
but so what?
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting that you do sighted parts.
To me, it's interesting, and I never see myself as
disabled
guy
course, yes.
or blind guy or you
right.
know. I don't.
Right. So you
and
have.
That's why I project what I project.
Yes.
No.
So you have a long. I mean, you're on medications for HIV.
I'm on medication. Everything's right. under control. I'm extremely
yeah.
healthy.
Yes.
Every time I go to my doctor, oh my God, Eduardo, you're doing better than people
right.
that don't
I have a friend who's HIV positive, and he told me
uh-huh.
recently that you know he just came from the doctor, and the doctor said you know he's got a good 35 years ahead of him.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, gee, how nice. That's
yeah.
I'm not getting such a thing. From
yeah,
my doctor,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So life has no limitations, really.
No,
and
no.
You're
life
getting,
is what you make out of it.
And
really.
You're getting acting jobs is a matter of doing what everybody does when you want to. You,
absolutely.
You hear about an audition. And,
yeah, well.
Do you have an agent?
Now I have an agent, and she sends me to auditions. Actually, the last one was for a pilot for CBS. And what I do, because, you know, they send you the sites beforehand,
mm-hmm.
I have, you know, I have an Apple computer that enlarges, you know, the page so I can see it and talks to me. And so I tape, record the lines, and I memorize them.
What kind of what kind of parts do you like to do best? Do you
That's
have
a good one.
Do you have a best?
Know. No.
I mean, do you sing?
Know.
Do you like to?
I do. I sing. Yes, I like to sing. Yes. I don't know. I think now I'm good for the daddy, I guess, the uncle.
As you get older?
I'm getting more of that.
That's funny. Do you ever, have you ever written letters to people, love letters, or received them, or?
No love letters, but I used to be a writer, actually. When I first got here, I would write like 3, 4, 5 pages of letters to my friends in Argentina.
Oh, so that counts.
To my mother.
Well, when I say love letters, I don't necessarily mean romantic. Yeah. Any affection.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
3, 4, 5 pages.
So yes, I would write and
write. So she has those and your friends have them. So you have a history of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
If you were to write one right now off the top of your head, who would it be to?
Whoa.
I mean, I'm thinking that friend who stayed with
you.
Or...
Yes, I would write to Jonathan. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
To thank him.
Back
in the day, it was hard for me to express my thankfulness to him, because even though I was doing all right and I was like moving forward, I was devastated.
Yes.
And I was in constant anguish. And that anxiety made me very unhappy with anything.
Sure.
He would come with things and like, oh, yes, but. Oh, yes, but. You know, there was always a but. And he didn't know what to do to please me. and it was very hard for him.
So
and,
how perfect to be able for him to be able to have a letter that expresses that now.
Yes, yes, yes. And actually, you know what? To be honest, I wrote one.
Oh, good.
I don't know who I was talking with. And said, you know what? It's very therapeutic when you have this things that you weren't able to tell people.
Exactly.
You know, say it in a letter.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you send it or not, but you say it in a letter.
Oh, well.
So I did.
In some way, it doesn't matter, I guess, if you send it or not, because with love letters, you're the boss.
Yeah,
but how nice
true.
If you do.
I wish I know where he is.
Oh, so there's an issue.
Yeah, there is that issue. You know, he was in LA for a while back then, and then he moved to Hawaii for a while, and then I knew he was in San Diego. I don't know. He's been around, so I don't even know if he's here or where he is.
Well, you know, if you care to take the time, maybe you could put in a little bit to find him. Maybe you will.
I strongly believe in destiny.
Yeah,
things are meant to happen.
Yes.
You know, the right tool, the right people.
Of course, there's something about writing that letter, putting it in an envelope, stamping it, putting his name on it, just set it aside.
Until
where he is comes
to you. Absolutely.
Oh, I thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm just so thrilled at the man I met here. This is great.
Thank you.
I'm going to go home and watch Pleasantville.
Go ahead. It's a fun movie. It's great.
Oh, it's one of the best. It's high on my list of favorites.
Perfect.
Well, thank you, dear, for sharing you with us. And I hope that if there's more to tell and more that you feel like sharing, you'll come back and do another one with me.
Sounds wonderful.
And we'll figure out another letter to write to somebody.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye in a minute after I mention that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter is a special occasion. Open to you at any time you have something nice that you want to tell somebody. Bye.